Everyone hits a bump in the road. What do you do with it? Be inspired as we explore the ways people experience, navigate, and manage the ups and downs and twists and turns in this road trip called life. David McGinley is my guest on Bump in the Road today. He's the author of Beyond Surviving, Cancer and Your Spiritual Journey. David is an interfaith spiritual counselor at the Nova Scotia Health Authority, and he's particularly well-suited to this role. He's had four cancer experiences in his life, one of which led to a near-death experience, or NDE. David's NDE was a real bump in the road, and not in the way you'd expect. David, welcome. I'm so glad to have you on Bump in the Road. If you would, give our listeners a little bit of background about you and your story.
Well, thanks so much, Patton. Pleasure to be here. It's been an interesting road for me. I'm a chaplain, right, with cancer patients, palliative and intensive care. And I work with death and dying and suffering and hope and mortality every, 5 days a week. But I seem to be oddly comfortable in that. And I think that's due in large part, of course, because I've had cancer four times. I was 17 years old and diagnosed with a strange, rare tumor called paraganglioma. And these little creatures make a Molotov cocktail of norepinephrine and dopamine. And when your adrenal gland turns on, for whatever reason, stress or even joy, excitement, that causes the tumor to blow. And so most people die immediately. It only takes about, a minute to die from this because you have a massive heart attack. Your blood pressure spikes through the roof. Now, I have had many minor explosions, which had often rendered me unconscious, but never took my life. So I've had that four times. I was 17 and then 27, then 35, then 38 years old. And thankfully, I'm 56 years old now, so I think I'm out of the woods. But cancer taught me how to be awake to the gift of life and work wisely with suffering. And it's an honor to support others as they face those health crises. It's been quite a journey. I'm grateful for it because I think I've been learning how to not only go through cancer, but grow through cancer. And I hope that I can help others do the same.
I think cancer has the opportunity to be an amazing growing experience. I see it as a spiritual portal or a portal into a more conscious life. And you had a very interesting experience during one of your episodes, for lack of a better word. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yes. One time when I was actually on internship. I'm a Lutheran pastor, right? So I've been in parish ministry for 10 years. When I was a student training in a parish, I was doing a service. So it's public speaking, and it was a service in a hospital chapel. Nothing is quite as anxiety-provoking as speaking in public. And my body was telling me that. The tumor was being activated, and I feel the effect of that, right? The peripheral flush, dizziness, buzzing in the ears, stomach cramps. And I thought, like all the other times that it had kicked in, that I can get this under control. And I didn't want to embarrass myself. I'm there doing a church service for these patients and families. But it was a big explosion from the tumor, and down I went. I was unconscious before I hit the floor and transported. I had a near-death experience. So this is a surprisingly common phenomenon. 1 in 10 people who have a brush with death will have a mystical experience, like seeing themselves out of their own body or seeing a different realm. So I found myself suddenly on a grassy hill, and the light was pouring from everything. I could feel every blade of grass as it moved, and I felt one with love, which infused the light. I felt suddenly whole and complete. There wasn't any aspect of myself that I was suppressing. I felt finally integrated, authentic, congruent, and more alive than I've ever been here. I knew I was dead, and that wasn't a problem because I was filled with joy and bliss. So this is a common and difficult to describe experience. It goes to the bone and beyond in reshaping who and what you are in your relationship to reality. And I wasn't alone. I found myself there with a person who felt like my best friend. He was, I can't physically describe him because that really didn't matter, but he was beauty and compassion and love and joy and power. A lot of people say, hey, that sounds like Jesus. You're a Christian pastor. Didn't you think it was Jesus? And to be honest, I didn't think it was Jesus. I didn't think they would send the boss to see me. It was a guy who worked in the warehouse, right? It was an apprentice. But nonetheless, this entity, which yes, was human and yet was not, walked with me on that grassy hill. And we had a chat in which basically he said, things are going very well. We are with you. You have a lot to learn, a lot more work to do. You can't stay here, so you have to go back. Now, I didn't want to go back. There was a tree at the top of that grassy hill, and I wanted with every fiber of my being to run to that tree because I knew if I got there, I would never come back here. It seemed to be a threshold point. I ached to see what was on the other side of that hill. And yet my feet felt like they were moving through mud. There was something in the power of his presence that prevented me from running up to the tree. We just walked, and I basked in the love and the wholeness that I was experiencing. And I said, well, no, I'm not going back. That's ridiculous. Why would I go back there? Because this is a dimension of being that is fragmented, that is compressed, that is dense, that is limited, that is filled with struggle and suffering, which ultimately are the best avenues of growth and learning. But I didn't want any more of this. And he imparted to me such gentle compassion, an endearing understanding, as you would have with a little child who doesn't want to go to bed on Christmas Eve. And he just put his hand on my shoulder and he poured this love into me. And he said, it's okay. We will be with you. You have a lot more work to do, and we will see you later. And with that, boom, I was back in my body. And that was horrible. Suddenly, the density of flesh and the pull of gravity and the sluggishness of thoughts and the poverty of words swallowed all of that joy and that vitality of being more alive than ever. And I immediately began to grieve. I was now separated from that love that had enfolded me. And they checked my heart, they checked my blood pressure, the doctor and the nurse were right there. All the patients had been taken from the chapel. I had scared them. Of course, you don't want I put a lot of people to sleep on a Sunday morning, but it's not good when the pastor becomes unconscious. They didn't find anything wrong with me other than they just wrapped me in a blanket and sent me home because they could find nothing wrong with me. We didn't know that the paraganglioma was doing these things. The first one that was taken out was in my bladder, so the metabolites had been flushed out and I didn't have this reaction. But this one, the second one, was on my femoral artery. The effects of those metabolites was immediate and amplified by that big blood vessel pouring them into the rest of my body. So they gave me some orange juice and told me to go home, and I frankly just crawled into my bed and wept and grieved and fell asleep. It has stayed with me.
Oh, I can only imagine. How do you start to make sense of the reality of that experience and integrate it into this life?
You do it awkwardly. Most people, and myself included at that time, don't know what to do with this. So you go through more than cognitive dissonance. I call it, you go through existential dissonance. You have been pulled from one reality to another so expansive and then compressed back into this reality What do you do with that? So like most people, I buried it. I put it away. I didn't tell anyone. Whenever I thought about it, I would feel this longing and homesickness for it. And yet I had to rationalize it some way. I had to integrate it. So, you know, you say to yourself, oh, it wasn't real, just a dream. Or I don't know what to do with it, so I won't do anything with it. But you cannot shake it. Your soul is aching for what you tasted. And your whole relationship to life is different now. You know that you are sustained by something much greater. Now, people go to their religious traditions, which have not talked about this well, to be honest, even though it is the hope they proclaim. And I was a pastor, so you'd think that I would get up in the pulpit next week and preach about it, but you don't know what to do, so you bury it. Most people take about 10 years to integrate this. Now, it's much faster if they have a support person or someone to help explain it. And you don't tell others right away because you wonder if they're going to think you're crazy. You don't want them to look at you funny. And it's a strange thing.
I relate to this. When my father died, I was not with him. And I woke up at about 3 a.m. out of a deep, peaceful sleep. And I felt this overwhelming sense of presence and love, unlike anything I'd ever experienced. And I went back to sleep. And the next day, of course, I found out that was when my father had died. And like you, I find your story so interesting because I just tucked it away. I didn't know what to do with it. And it probably took cancer for me to really pull that memory out of my experience and start to question what did it mean.
Yes, oddly enough, much like trauma, exceptional spiritual experiences are suppressed in people, often triggered by another crisis or a lateral experience that triggered a somatic feeling of it, something that helps you shift your consciousness back to it. You would think these things would be talked about much more easily, but a lot of people don't, again, because they worry others will think they're crazy. Now, the Institute of Noetic Sciences did a fantastic survey, a study on this. They were looking at the varieties or the frequency of exceptional or mystical experiences, such as what you've described. And in their survey, they found over 90% of people, including scientists, have had an exceptional a mystical experience. If it's real, if we do indeed continue after our bodies do not, if indeed our reality is emanating and sustained from a deeper level or dimension we might call spiritual, then these must be universal phenomenon. It must be common in the human condition. And in other cultures, yes, it is, and people talk openly about it. But in the Western culture, we compartmentalize it. It doesn't fit into that materialist mindset. Yet the majority of people will say, yes, I've had a mystical experience. Yours is a type that I hear every week, right? Working with cancer patients, working with the dying, most people will have the spirit of a loved one appear in the room where they feel that presence as they're approaching the end of life. And many family members report, my father appeared to me, and that was the moment that he died, even though they're separated by hundreds or thousands of miles. Very exciting.
It's fascinating. You have some statistics in your book that I find really fascinating, too. You say that 0.04% of reality is visual.
Yes, I love exploring the nature of what is reality, and science has informed me on that much more than my faith has. Science has discovered that all of the visible matter in the universe, all the stuff we can see and feel, represents 0.004% of the universe. That's within the visible spectrum of light. Then there's all the other atoms outside the frequency of the visible spectrum. All the atoms in the universe make up 4% of the universe. My goodness. Then about 25% of the universe is something called dark matter. And astrophysicists have only been able to infer the presence and reality of that by its mathematical effects on the calculations of the movement of galactic clusters. The rest of the universe, over 70%, is something called dark energy. My goodness, that means that all our assumptions on what is real, what you see is what you get, I won't believe it unless I can touch it, all of those are based upon 0.004%. We are exercising a great naivete and hubris when we say that this is all that there is to reality. I'm excited by that. It offers an intelligent new paradigm for a spiritual conversation.
Is this a conversation where spirituality and science start to merge?
I think that this is a common ground where the dialogue can go much deeper than it ever has before. And in all healthy spiritual traditions, the emphasis is upon not actually what you believe, though it appears that way. The emphasis is upon love. How do you love? How do you treat your fellow human being? How do you love the world? How do you love yourself? How can you become love? Because that's the goal of any healthy spiritual tradition. The religions of the world have not emphasized that enough. But I've discovered your spirituality is not determined so much by the content of your belief as it is by the quality of your love. For God is love. Those are synonyms. That flips everything on its head. That breaks down the walls. And it can be part of the conversation with science where we explore what is the nature of consciousness. You know, is God the fundamental primary consciousness from which reality emanates? Let's be open to the mystery and excited about a new dialogue.
Now, on a more mundane level, after your near-death experience, you know, you take time, you take a decade or so, and you try to integrate this into your life. Does it lead to a paradigm change in the way you see things?
Yes, and I'm really embarrassed to say that as monumental and foundational as that paradigm shift is in the perspective of what you are and what reality is, I forget that I am a spiritual being having a physical experience. I forget that all of the noise of the world is just that. It is noise. Only love is the most essential, important thing. And how we live that out and exercise it in justice and fairness and equity and compassion. Oh, above all, it must be compassion. Even with my near-death experience, I forget all this and get caught up in the noise and am as human and flawed as the next person. But it only takes a moment for me to remember my near-death experience and return to that gratitude and that absolute peace and calm and confidence that it's all going to be okay.
Thank you for joining us today. I hope you found something in today's podcast that inspires you along your own life path, because sometimes a bump in the road is actually a portal into a more conscious and meaningful life. Bump in the Road is a production of Cancer Road Trip. Subscribe to the podcast, follow us on social media at Cancer Road Trip, and you can learn more at www.cancerroadtrip.com. Until next time, be safe and be well.